I'm Alton Brown, the king of culinary competitions has returned.
And I'm Kristen Kish. Along with Alton, we'll be guiding you through all of the exciting cooking combat.
You have 10 seconds, 9, 8, 7.
An epic battle royale with the chance to be crowned the Iron Legend. This is Iron Chef.
I've never heard of anything like this!
Oh, hey there. Welcome to Cord Killers, the show about watching the stuff you love when you want, where you want, however you want. We're not going to boss you around. I'm Tom Merritt.
I mean, first of all, we will boss you around. We'll tell you what to like, what not to like, and most importantly, when to watch it on whatever format you like. But most importantly, I want to know, was that Iron Chef, Bryce?
That was. So food guru Alton Brown, Iron Chef Chairman Mark Dacascos, and Top Chef winner Kristen Kish are bringing Iron Chef back to life in Iron Chef : Quest for an Iron Legend that is coming back to Netflix this summer.
Just please give me a brief moment to believe that it's called Iron Chef : Quest. That's what it's about.
But I was glad to see the chairman back. You're always a little worried that they might do Iron Chef without the chairman, but I was glad he shows up in the trailer.
Iron Chef is as old now as what was when Iron Chef was new, like Ozzy and Harriet. Like,
don't say that. Now I'm going to feel bad watching like Miami Vice and whatnot. What are you doing, Tom?
Miami Vice is older than Iron Chef.
What's happening?
Wait, no, that's good. Miami Vice, if Iron Chef was older than Miami Vice, we'd be in trouble. But Miami Vice is still older than Iron Chef. So that's okay then.
Okay.
All right.
Right?
Sure. If you say it's okay, it's okay.
Yeah, I'm going to take it.
Wait, would it make you feel better if Miami Vice was newer than Iron Chef?
Weirdly, yes.
Now I want to probe this more, but we really should probably get to our primary target. the last earnings of Discovery before it becomes Warner Brothers Discovery were released, and it saw a revenue increase of 13% before it even gets HBO Max and all that stuff. Big part of that was from advertising on digital and mobile. So basically, streaming at Discovery, doing great. And now they're going to get all that Warner content to supercharge it. And Discovery is not alone. The Interactive Advertising Bureau, or IAB, says that digital advertising grew 21% last year. And you may think, well, yeah, you know, the internet, it's hot. But it's not only expected to grow to 26% this year and reach $49.2 billion, but the fastest growing part of the interactive ad market is the connected TV ad market. That's your Rokus, your Apple TVs, your Fire TVs. It's expected to grow 39% this year to reach $21.2 billion, just a little less than half of the entire digital market. And there's room to grow. IAB says connected TV makes up 36% of the total time spent watching TV, but only gets 18% of the ad spend. So the money has not shifted to where the eyeballs are yet. The big hurdles to that happening are apparently some lack of transparency and interoperability across platforms, fragmentation of supply paths. In other words, it sounds like it's a little harder to place a digital ad properly, even though there's more eyeballs there and you get a little more out of it. The money is slowly following the people, though. Data from NPower says 27% of homes have ditched cable at this point. 3 years ago, that was 9%. Over the air has barely budged in that time, 14 to 15%. So people are going from cable to streaming. Cable has declined from 76% to 57% of the U.S. We're going to pass that 50% mark soon, Brian, and I expect when that happens, we're going to see a sea change in how you get your TV.
So back to the beginning, Discovery seeing a momentum boost. Do we feel like that's organic, that's natural, that it's just super popular all of a sudden? Or do we feel like this is sort of everybody knowing that there's about to be a merger about to happen and people giving it a try?
I don't think it had to do with the merger at all. Most consumers aren't following that story. What I imagine is Discovery Plus was launched a couple of years ago. And is starting to replace cable for some people. They're like, oh, wait, I can get Shark Week. I can get Food TV. I can get HGTV on that thing. Yeah, I'll do that. And Discovery also has a very good worldwide presence where they provide some streaming services in different ways around the world than they do in the United States. So I think it was just Discovery is a solid growing platform in streaming like everything else, because streaming is growing.
So what do you think over the next year or 2 years will be our number one metric that we want to benchmark everything by? Because like at this point, would it be safe to say that that sort of traditional media is kind of crushed and now it's all over the top networks?
It's getting there, right? That 57% still means technically most people watch their TV on cable, right? And then there was that data that 36% of total time spent watching TV comes from connected TV. Those numbers have to hit 50% plus. When they do, and they're getting close, they might do, cable might go below 50% this year. The time spent then is going to start, you know, moving faster towards 50%, certainly by 2023, at which point all that money is going to start flowing into connected TV, which then means that people are going to be motivated to make it easier to buy the ads there, make the platforms more integrated, and start fixing the things that they can get by with now, because, hey, people are signing up anyway, right? At a certain point, you're going to have so many people in the streaming market that you're going to want to make sure they pick you. You know, Netflix is learning that early. They because they're the leader and they dropped first, they're figuring that out now. All these services are going to have to figure that out. And all those things that we keep saying, like, well, when it gets popular enough, they'll fix the problem of choosing what to watch and finding out where things are. When it's popular enough, streaming services will consolidate and maybe they'll create easier ways to subscribe and unsubscribe, even more easier than they are now. We're getting to that point where it's going to be popular enough within the next year or two.
So previously we had sort of called our own shots as far as like, when will we feel vindicated for, you know, over the top streaming networks being legitimate, whether it's a, you know, Oscars, yeah. Emmys and so on, whether it's a percentage of so on, whether it's a market cap or stock price or whatever. Like, what is our new bespoke target that we're rooting for?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, what do you think? Because I think 50%, cable going below 50% is the avalanche point.
That'll like, be the
it,
moment.
Once it dips
weirdly
below that, suddenly it's just going to start eroding really fast because the companies will stop believing in it as well. And they'll stop fighting so hard to keep subscribers.
So I know that personally, at that point, I'll weirdly feel like empathetic to old school traditional cable television. It'll become the vinyl of my life, and I'll kind of like want it to survive. Bryce, do you have a hot take? Do you even care one way or the other
about if cable survives?
No. What's
the
our next benchmark that we're looking for?
Yeah, what's the next milestone?
I think it would have to be not just cable under 50%. But streaming overtaking the cable percentage, right? More homes have streaming than they have cable.
That's a good
or
point.
Over
That's
the
a good, and I should clarify, when I say cable is under 50%, I'm assuming connected TV is the remainder there. So yeah, that it's got to be both. You're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it weird that all of a sudden I want to hope that cable never goes away? Now that, like, once they become the minority, all of a sudden I want them to be a bespoke, like, esoteric kind of way to enjoy all of your programming.
You're going to get cable, ironically.
As
a retro boom.
It sounds like you're saying that half jokingly, but I mean that entirely sincerely.
No, I know you do. I can totally see myself doing that too. Like, hey, maybe I'll get cable, so, you know, while it's still around, because it stops being a, I don't want to support this because we really need to be in the future thing, right? It removes its power and you're no longer feel like you're feeding the problem. You're helping preserve history at that point.
As a matter of fact, we went to grab some canoes and go on the lake, and the kids really got a kick out of just going through the radio dial, just like whatever was playing was playing. And yeah, some of it was old stuff from my childhood. Some of it was like, oh my God, I remember this song from 8 years ago because that was a long time ago for the kids. I'm down for it.
Do you think a play, this, I'm playing Brian Brushwood with this idea a little bit. Do you think a play would be to offer old school cable over the internet? So in other words, no, you don't have to actually have us come to your house and install it, but you'll be able to get, and you won't have to live in a particular area, but you'll be able to get simplified cable television, because the cable companies could do that. The reason you've got this fragmentation with Sling TV and YouTube TV is they're all fighting for deals to get carriage, but the cable companies could strike a deal. They just don't want to, because they don't want to yet give up leverage to get cable subscribers. But once they give up and they're like, yeah, we're not keeping them, we've kept them as long as we could, do you think there's like a, you know, like a 30 channel old fashioned, you know, for older subscribers to be like, this has got a guide, it's what you're used to, but it's still delivered over the internet?
Not only encourage your idea, but double down on it. XM Sirius already kind of does that, where they have a 60s channel, a 70s channel, an 80s channel, and so on, right? Mm-hmm. But they've already worked out all of the licensing deals for all of the content. I would definitely pay money for that, for the ability for linear real-time content. Yeah.
I mean, there's something for a Pluto or a Zumo, or one of those situations to do that, to be the front end for that, because they already have whole channels devoted to nostalgia stuff, right?
So then the question becomes, is there a difference between is there one particular type of content, or do you go like all you can eat buffet, like 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and so on? Or do you do all mysteries, all procedurals, all crime dramas?
Because at first you can just deliver ABC, NBC, CBS. That'll have for years. You'll be able to do that. At some point, channels are going to go away. I really believe that. I think HBO Max, Peacock, Netflix, those are the new channels. And it won't make sense to keep a channel going, especially on cable. Maybe broadcast channels last for a long, long time, but because of over the air. But like Bravo, you know, probably goes away. At which point do you do a simulated Bravo on Pluto, or is it better to just have the Top Chef channel, you know, that kind of thing?
This is absolutely perverse, and I'm not advocating or anti-advocating for it. But I suspect that there might be something to time traveling to a particular moment. The moment, and forgive me, the moment Reagan got shot.
Historical moments, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. Moment, the entire week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, all the examples, space shuttle blowing up, all that stuff, they're all going to be tragedies because they're historic moments. A good one would be the moon landing, right? The week of the moon landing. What was all the programming leading up to it? It wasn't all about the moon.
11/9, on November 9th, when the Berlin Wall came down.
Oh, yeah. Right? Like, those are great. I for a long time, have wanted there to be the historic feed, where it's like all the ads, all the television shows, all the movies, like... You couldn't do it with every era, every second, but there's large swaths of history where you could recreate the actual broadcast calendar for a certain period of time. I would love that. It's a licensing nightmare with copyright law the way it is, though.
Part of season two of World's Greatest Con involved the complexities of what is fair and unfair in the world of game show television. Could you imagine like reliving those live moments of game show frauds that were happening?
For a brief period of time, a year or so ago, archive.org had a stream of the original MTV launch days. So it was air check tape, all the ads, all the videos, the whole thing. I so enjoyed that, and it immediately got taken down by like 1,000 different people, not just Viacom, but like advertisers were like, no, we don't want you showing that particular old ad. God, but I really wish there was a way to give, maybe the Library of Congress could give an exemption for that, to be like, no, for historical purposes, you should be able to show that.
Cordkillers@gmail.com. Explain to us what it would take to make this possible, because I would love to believe that I could experience this.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one old style thing you can still experience, Brian, is the ability to have to go to a theater to see a movie. With all that streaming we've been talking about, you might be forgiven for thinking it has won the war. But CinemaCon happening last week, and all the theater owners were pushing back, saying, yep, the window's here to stay. Looks like it's going to be 45 days for blockbusters, 17 days for specialty titles, so much smaller than the 90 days it was a couple of years ago. But the window's going to remain. In fact, Sony believes theater money is driving its success. Remember, Sony doesn't have its own streaming play. John Fithian, the head of the National Association of Theater Owners, told a packed auditorium on Tuesday at CinemaCon, quote, "I am pleased to announce that simultaneous release is dead as a serious business model, and piracy is what killed it."
Sorry. What?
Yes. Certainly the perception of piracy helped kill it. I'm not sure that actual piracy actually stole money from theater owners, but I also don't know if I'd count Day and Date entirely dead just yet. I think it's just sleeping.
I've gotten real soft over the last few years, Tom, when it comes to the rhetoric that people say on a quarterly basis to board members. I'm not even mad that people need to say these ridiculous things, but I don't believe them anymore.
Yeah, I think this is meant to make something true by saying it loud enough in front of the people you need to say it to, right? It's right. CinemaCon. These are the people who make the movies, the people who, some of whom, decided to go Day and Date during the pandemic. These are the theater owners saying, we gave you what you want. It's a shorter window. Shut up about it. We aren't going away anytime soon. So I get it. They're exaggerating for effect, and that's fine. I don't think Day and Date is impossible in the future. In fact, at some point, we're going to have an inflection point with theaters, and I think it's farther off than it is with cable, but we're going to have an inflection point where theaters are going to want to have whatever in there, even if it's also streaming, and be pushing for the fact that, like, seeing a movie in the theater is a different and sometimes pleasurable experience versus seeing it at home. Wouldn't you like to come out to the theater and see the premiere of this thing versus watching it at home? Yes, they've kicked the can down the road a few years right now. I don't think that idea is dead forever.
100% it's not dead, mainly because they gave us the horror show that was giving us exactly what we said we wanted. And it turns out that what we said we wanted was Day and Date releases, and what we got was a bunch of kids yelling and screaming and wanting to get sodas in the middle of the movies, and you couldn't stop them or nothing, and I hated it. And I'm very, very glad that we're going back to movie theaters.
I've heard, you know, both sides of that argument made, with some saying like, it's actually worse at home, and now I realize it, like you're saying, and also people saying, oh my gosh, the ability to stream Dune on day one, what a blessing. I didn't have to go to the theater and have other people's kids interrupt me because they were talking during the movie, because I live alone or whatever. So I think there's room for everybody. Some people are going to prefer the theaters, and some people prefer it at home. For now, it's tipped back to the theater, but there's always going to be. I was surprised when HBO Max was doing Day and Date, how many things I'm like, well, I'm definitely going to go to the theater to see that. And then the night it was like, but I could just watch it at home here, and I don't have to get in the car.
Here is what we have not seen. Previously, when we've seen Day and Date, it's always been because like, oh my goodness, what are we to do? It's the pandemic. Here, we're going to do you a favor. We're going to do Day and Date. You're welcome. We're very great. We're HBO Max. What we haven't seen is we don't really have a legitimate reason one way or the other to either do Day and Date or theatrical release only, but we're just going to price them differently and see how you react. And we've seen experiments with that in the past, but they've not been with very popular movies. I think we will see that now. And I think it's going to be more of a serious experiment.
Because and if you're like, oh, but the theater owners won't show it. No, the AMCs and the Regals won't. But Netflix does day and date. They're still doing day and date. Occasionally, they'll do like a 5-day window or maybe a 10-day window. And they were touting that during their earnings call. Everybody focused on the fact they lost subscribers because that was the bigger news. But they were touting global theatrical releases. Netflix is going to be on the forefront of the day and date. And they will continue to do day and date. And they'll continue to be able to show that. So the other thing that Netflix won't do yet, and maybe will never do, but won't do yet, is what you're talking about, where it's, you know, $14.99 to see the movie in the theater or $29.99 to watch it at home.
I mean, the very short version of the story is that I will go see a movie with my wife in the theater, and then I will pay even more money, twice as much money, to watch it again to show my kids, my teenage kids. Bryce, how does this land with you as somebody who doesn't have a dog in the fight?
I mean, I went and watched a movie in the theater a few weeks ago, the Everything Everywhere All at Once, and I thought that was great, and I loved watching it in a theater compared to watching it just at home on a laptop or a TV. But that's not every movie. That's not going to be every movie. I don't want even new movies. There's going to be plenty of new stuff out there that look fine, but I would also probably rather pay more than the cost of a ticket on release day to watch it at home. Oh, and
what's funny is, like, I will bother to go and see it on release day in the theater and then pay even more to watch it a second time at home. I'm probably alone in that.
Nope. That's exactly what I just said.
Oh, good.
But
good.
but also, like, why do you have to wait at all for that? Don't you want my money? Don't you want my money?
Yeah.
Don't you want, I'm going to forget in 17 or 45
days. And the answer is, yes, they want your money, but so does the theater. And the theater doesn't get your money if you watch it at home.
Well, I don't care about the theater. I don't care about the theater. I mean,
the theater cares about you, Bryce. Well,
I'm sure they
or at least your money.
That's, yep.
you know, I mean, when you think about this, it is funny that it's like, we're talking about paying $14.99 to see a movie in a theater, one single movie. People are complaining about Netflix costing $14.99 to see all the Netflix movies and TV shows and everything. It's all a matter of perspective. It's all a matter of psychological expectation. I'm not saying that anything is weird or dumb for you to think, but you know, it's all context about what's considered expensive and what isn't.
But I'll tell you what's not expensive is just a dollar, maybe $2 an episode over at patreon.com/cordkillers, keeping us loud, live, and independent, making sure you get your own RSS feed.
How do they do that? It's impossible. It's way too cheap.
No, well, you know, it's not expensive enough. That's what I say. That's how high quality this engagement is. Most importantly, you get your own RSS feed. You don't have to wait, and you get exclusive access to our After Talk segment.
Delivered
thank you to all
to
of our bosses.
At that price, that's an amazing value, Brian.
All right, now, Tom, it's the beginning of May, so I don't know how I'm feeling. Let me check my pulse.
How you doing? Oh, dear.
I seem to have 3 digits.
We might be losing Brian.
Oh, no.
Yep.
We need 9 viewers to become patrons at patreon.com/cordkillers.
Here's what happened to Brian. 9 viewers had a bigger tax bill than they expected this economy, and they had to step down. So we just need 9
don't
of you
them.
Who never stepped up.
They're awful.
To they're chumps. Brian.
They're awful. They're
please
awful. Don't
be better than
them.
Those chumps who had to pay their taxes. Please pay us.
Patreon.com/cordkillers.
Do one of those things, and now we'll talk about how to watch. Peacock ended Q1 with 28 million monthly active accounts, up from 24.5 million at the end of 2021. 13 million are paying, because I know a bunch of you are like, yeah, but they're all getting the free thing. No, 13 million are actually paying for Peacock. That's up from 9 million. And NBC expects the service to grow pretty evenly, or you might say slowly, until Q4, when Sunday Night Football comes back, Premier League Soccer, the World Cup. Those will all be available on Peacock. and that's expected to drive users. So they got their bump from Super Bowl and the Olympics, and then they'll get another bump at the end of the year. Peacock will still keep trying to get you to identify it with more than just sports, though. Bel Air Season 1 set a streaming record for Peacock at 8 million accounts. Out of the 28 million monthly active accounts, 8 million of them tried Peacock. They're also getting John Woo to reimagine the classic 1989 film The Killer. John Woo did that movie, and he's going to do a new version of it. A church choir comedy is coming from Will Packer, starring Chloe Bailey. It's called Praise This. It's like Girls Trip, Praise This. It's both Will Packer movies. A movie about the origin story of LeBron James called Shooting Stars. Yeah, it's sports, but it's not live sports. Bravo shows will show up on Peacock the day after they air on the cable channel. That's new. The back catalog of those shows is also leaving Hulu for Peacock exclusivity in the autumn. Peacock's going to get Lionsgate films in part of the pay two window starting in 2024. If you're like, wait, isn't Roku also getting Lionsgate films in the pay two window? Yes. Basically, when a Lionsgate film leaves theaters, it'll go to Stars. Then it'll go to Roku briefly, then to Peacock, and then back to Roku. Also, Peacock is attempting to work in more ads without totally upsetting you. It's going to introduce a frame ad where the video keeps playing but shrinks down a little to show an ad in a frame around the video. I imagine they're not going to do this when you're watching a drama or a comedy. The example they're using is a golf broadcast, so it's probably for those live sports broadcasts to, you know, just squeeze down and advertise. Whatever. And that would not come if you're paying for the service. That would only come if you're in the ad supported version of the service. So I guess you pay for an ad supported, but only in the ad supported versions of the service, whether you're getting it free or paid for.
So this is totally subjective. I don't mean to state like objectively whether or not somebody's doing a good job or a bad job or whatever, but I really was impressed with Peacock early on. But it hasn't caught on with me as much as I would like. It continues to be the place where I somehow pay for it and yet still watch ads on Miami Vice. Where are you at emotionally?
They're not ads in the sense of paid placements of third-party products. They are ads in the sense of promotions for Peacock, correct, which I find annoying. Like, yes, I'm on Peacock. You don't have to promote it to me. Because it feels like you're interrupting my viewing. And the reason I paid for the premium version was so you wouldn't interrupt my viewing. Yeah, I know it's not a soap commercial.
Which is why I want to open up the floor to a discussion of where we emotionally with how Peacock is doing, because I will say emotionally, I've been blown away with how much better HBO Max has done, better than I ever dared suspect they were going to perform. They've done very, very well. I expect even more with the Discovery deal and all that stuff. But Peacock, out of the gates, we were fairly enthusiastic. I am trying to keep my enthusiasm up, but I'm not feeling it.
Yeah, because you prefer scripted content. And I think Peacock's strength has been live sports.
Correct.
And so I think that's why they're doing as well as they are, because people realize like, oh, wait, I can get this stuff without a cable subscription, which didn't used to even be possible. Right. I can get Sunday Night Football. I can get Premier League Soccer. I can get the World Cup. Those are all coming to Peacock. That's great. I'll sign up. And then you've got Bel Air, which seems to be a hit. So they've got their house of cards,
so to speak.
They're that far behind. But they also have live sports. So I feel like Peacock for a few years here is going to be considered like, oh, yeah, that's the place with the good live sports. You're going to see HBO Max or whatever it ends up being called have that, too, because they've got Turner Sports. They've got basketball. They've got hockey. That will cease to be a differentiator at some point. And I think Peacock really needs to have a few more hits besides Bel Air. And I have not seen one that I can say for sure will be a hit. We'll see if these... one of these does, but
Bryce, what about you?
I don't use Peacock.
Okay.
There's nothing on there if there's something on there that I want to watch, like I watched the first season of Brave New World and I liked it and then they canceled it. So I don't, there's not an NBC thing I really want to watch right now.
Yeah. Well, and they would have to have a series that you're like, oh, that looks really good. Okay, fine. I'll sign up.
Right.
Or get Formula One racing, right? Get your
yeah.
sport.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's always going to be true. When you look at these services, you may say like, well, they don't have anything I like. And it's like, all right, that doesn't mean they'll fail.
Right.
As long as they have enough things that other people like. And that's why I think Peacock really just has right now the sports and Bel Air going for it. They're in it for the long term, though. NBC's not, and Comcast is not going to, you know, pull the plug on this anytime soon. I would recommend you watch the Rotten Tomatoes channel on Peacock, though. It's very good.
Why would you
and
suggest that?
And run by my wife.
Ah, so. Okay.
But it's really good. All right, let's get to What to Watch and Under Surveillance.
All about here to stay. It's all about location, location.
Under Surveillance.
But seriously, it's a really good channel. It's got lots of... I mean, movies? You like movies? Who doesn't like movies? Pre-sales are high for a movie called Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which arrives later this week, already passing The Batman, Captain Marvel, Thor Ragnarok, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 in pre-sales. Apparently, it has $42 million in pre-sales. That's according to Disney. Projections are of a $150 million domestic opening weekend. Some think it might go as high as $200 million. Granted, Captain Marvel, Thor Ragnarok, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, they're not the biggest of the Marvel franchises, but it looks like it could be hanging up there. Marvel also released a new trailer that has Patrick Stewart's voice in it.
So this is one that on the one hand, it's like is it going to win hard or very hard? That's the big question.
Sure.
Because yeah, on the one hand, it's like it could win very, very hard because it's been primed by one of the biggest Sony releases of all time with the recent Spider-Man movie, the Disney Plus tie-in with the What If franchise, spoilers, minor. But also it we're in this weird mushy after phase of MCU kind of wrapping up after Endgame. If I was going to predict, I think it'll do closer to the lower end, around 150-ish. And I think that the I think it's going to get stung with some negative reviews. That's total guess. I have no inside knowledge.
I'm going to say it goes above 175 million.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll make it to 200, but I feel like it will it won't matter if it gets bad reviews. I think it's just got the momentum of hunger. So the bad reviews would hit the second week, but the pre-sales are so crazy. I think people will just go see it. This is the one that was supposed to be the big blockbuster the summer after Endgame, right? Like this, if it hadn't been for 2020 being 2020, this would have been the anchor, right? Yeah. So I think that explains people are like, oh my gosh, I've been waiting for 2 years for this movie. Does feel like it's got lots of tricks up its sleeve too.
I should not say anything. I have personal opinions based on who's directing and writing and who's not directing and writing.
You have not prejudice, but you have some presentiments.
Correct.
Based on
correct. Yes. That would be a good way to put it.
I'm picking up what you're throwing down. On the other hand, those things bother. Some of those things, I don't.
Okay,
I like a reference fest when you don't.
Yes.
And this could be a reference fest, but I might be into that.
Yes.
It does feel like we're gonna get a lot of hints towards future projects,
which
in here as well.
By the way, can either be a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, it could be that would be a net negative.
Yeah, if there's too many, you mean, or if it makes them
or if in general people don't dig where things appear to be headed.
Like, man, I was really excited about New Mutants until I saw the mutants. That kind of reaction.
Yes. Also, is there a lot of New Mutants in this?
I don't know. There might be mutants in it. The whole thing with mutants, folks, is like that's code for X-Men. No one wants to say the word X-Men, but remember that Disney now owns 20th Century, so it gets to do X-Men movies if it wants. They haven't done an X-Men movie yet. They did put some X-Men characters into WandaVision, so everyone's like, are there going to be X-Men? But no one wants to say X-Men, so everybody talks about mutants. So there might be mutants in Doctor Strange. I'm not saying there are. It's not a spoiler. I'm just making it up.
Yeah. I do know this much. Feels like a lot of work. Everything feels like a lot of work. I feel like I did my homework. I read all 22 books of the MCU. It's hard for me to get excited about doing more homework.
Ah, so you're starting to feel weary about that. Yeah.
Yes.
I hope, here's what I hope. I hope that after you see this, your reaction was, I was really worried that this was going to feel like work, but it was fun. And it all hung together well. And it pointed me toward, in a way that I'm even more excited for the next Marvel movie.
I mean, yeah, I hope
that's
that,
what I hope they achieve.
I hope that
that's what
for
they
me
will
too.
Achieve. But yeah. I think it's possible. Will you allow that?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
How about I get you excited about Avatar?
Yes, I'm actually already primed to be very excited about Avatar because I've ridden the ride at Disney. I remembered that it existed 20 years ago. I'm very excited.
Well, Disney showed a trailer at CinemaCon of Avatar: The Way of the Water, which is the official name of the second Avatar movie. That was part of the announcement as well. The trailer has not been released to the general public, but odds are you might see it before Doctor Strange this weekend, since it's a 20th century film, which is owned by Disney.
So Avatar is one of those weird movies where I cannot help but deeply, deeply appreciate the level of thinking and world building that has gone into it. And yet very little of it seems to resonate instantly with most people.
There's a backlash against Avatar.
Right?
When I say I enjoy Avatar and I've watched it more than once, people look at me like I just said that, you know, I eat kittens or something. Like, I don't quite. I understand not liking.
How much
it.
Do you love Avatar?
I mean, yeah. Avatar was a fine movie.
See, that's what everybody says.
It was maybe the best use of 3D technology.
Beautiful. Right?
Beautiful, really well made. The little blue guys look like blue guys. I mean, what
don't
you want?
That's the other thing. That was the year, remember, at the Oscars where there was kind of this backlash where all of the actors were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You going to replace us with computers? What is this? And then it was weird.
And Zoe Saldana was like, I'll cash your check. Yeah, I'm fine with that. Which she has done many a special effects movie since. I'm looking forward to Avatar: The Way of the Water. I guess because I'm not as much into story with Avatar as I would be, say, with Marvel, where, as you just pointed out, it could start to weigh on you after so many movies that you are that into the story, but you are into the story. They've done a good job with that. Avatar, I'm like, yeah, okay, so it was Dances with Wolves in blue space people, whatever. I was there for the pretty. If this one is pretty, is like even prettier because it's been so long that we've had better technology to make it prettier, like, I'll have a great time. I'll enjoy it. I'll soak in it like a bath.
100%. Look, ain't nothing wrong with a simple story. A simple story can be very, very beautiful. A simple story, I don't know, we're about to talk about Better Call Saul. In a world where we watched Picard that had like layers upon layers of explanations on things, like, it was really refreshing to go from that to Better Call Saul, where it's like, I get it. You're in the desert. There's a bad guy. You want to trick him. Awesome. Simple. I like it. And Avatar can do the exact same thing.
Yeah, it might not. We're not guaranteeing anything. But if it does it the same thing, then I'll enjoy it. Also shown at CinemaCon was some footage from the new Flash movie. Man, I feel, speaking of Doctor Strange finally coming out and maybe the Flash movie finally coming out, it feels like we've been talking about the Flash movie since we were a twit. It's got in the footage, again, this is not publicly released yet, Michael Keaton saying, "You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts." Which is, of course, a line from the original Batman that Michael Keaton was in. It also has the bat cycle from the Christopher Nolan films, because remember, we're talking about alternate universes here. Apparently, there's a young Superman in there. Movie hits theaters June 23rd next year. So there's plenty of time for them to finally release a trailer to the public.
The sillier DC Universe gets, the happier I am. And this comes from a kid who was a smug piece of dirt who loved his Marvel over his DC as a teenager. But man, the more I see Peacemaker, the more I see Harley Quinn on HBO Max, the nuttier DC gets, the happier I am.
Yeah, I'm kind of an Ezra fan. I want to see him do this movie. I want to see him play the Flash. I'm a big fan of the Flash. So I don't know. I can't wait to see the trailer, I guess, is what I'd say. And I loved the Batman that Michael Keaton was in. It was, I was in college. My college buddies and I all saw it multiple times. We did a road trip playing the CD and quoting the movie to each other. So it's got a special place in my heart there. So I'm totally going to fall for that where others may not. But yeah, I'm into it.
Yep.
Marvel and Sony announced that Bad Bunny, yes, the music world's Bad Bunny, has been cast as El Muerto in a movie set to come to theaters January 12th, 2024. Got a few years here. El Muerto, from the comics, is a wrestler whose powers are handed down by ancestry in the form of a mask. And this is one of the series of Sony movies like Madam Web, Kraven the Hunter, that are based on Marvel characters that it has a license to beyond Spider-Man. They mostly licensed Spider-Man back in the day and still hold that license, but they also got ancillary characters. So El Muerto apparently famously goes in the ring with Spider-Man. So that's why when they licensed, Marvel licensed it out in the old days, they lumped it in that Sony deal. So they're taking advantage of all these characters.
I'm in. To be honest, I'm unfamiliar with the character or the franchise, or I love the fact that...
Are you more familiar with Bad Bunny or El Muerto?
Neither, sir. I'm more familiar with the fact that it's an expansive universe, and I love the fringes of it with which I know nothing. That's my favorite thing.
Any Bad Bunny fans out there? Let us know what you think. Cordkillers@gmail.com. I think he's done some amazing like short video stuff, both commercials and music videos. So I'm kind of excited about that. Let's talk about what we have our eyes on. Brian, what have you been watching?
Dude, nothing. I went to Vegas. I went to Scoop Fest. It was a lot of fun. And when I came back, my daughter was very excited to be playing the Stanley Parable, which, of course, thematically is very similar to Severance. There's a new, like, a deluxe, ultra deluxe version of it. I've only experienced all of like 5 minutes of it. I'm already in love. The first thing it does is ask you to set the time, and then it mocks you for setting the time accurately. I'm already in love.
I have been watching season two of The Flight Attendant on HBO Max. One of the things I loved about season one was their ability to kind of offer a 60s jet setting vibe while not stylizing it. Like it's all modern airplanes, modern destinations. It's all modern stuff, but they're doing that sort of Alfred Hitchcock-ish mystery. The first season, Kaley Cuoco's character was a drunk and was dealing with the fact that she couldn't control her drinking. This season, she's a recovering alcoholic. And so as she is swept up into the new mystery of this season, instead of having to deal with her drinking as she did in season one, she has to deal with not failing, falling off the wagon, and resisting temptation and having a sponsor. It's a really deft weaving of those two stories this season so far. There's four episodes out. As they did last time, they're putting out two episodes a week, and they're under an hour. They used to be closer to a half hour first season. These seem more like 40. Or so, but they're doable. And it's fun. It's a fun mystery. Well acted. Lots of great people. Margaret Cho is in it. Rosie Perez is in it. The guy who plays the pilot of the ship on Picard. What's his name?
Rios
is Kaley Cuoco's boyfriend in The Flight Attendant.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's a good cast. Go check it out. The Flight Attendant on HBO Max. Bryce, what should we be on the lookout for?
Hey, Dave in Waco wrote in and said, for an on-the-lookout choice, I don't think you've ever mentioned Baltazar. It is a French series forensics procedural featuring a thrill-seeking medical examiner whose quirk is that his dead, quote-unquote, patients talk to him and help him solve the crime. Of course, there's a full cast of quirky characters to help him bring the killers to justice, including his dead wife, who was killed by the serial killer Balthazar is continuing to search for. It is shown on Acorn and is in French with English subtitles. There are 4 seasons available, Dave, in Waco. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, there are 4 seasons of Balthazar on Acorn TV. The 4th season just came out this year, you can also buy them. But Acorn really seems to be the only place. There's a lot of have you watched Acorn, Tom? There's like a lot of British shows on there.
Yeah, I've sampled it once or twice, but I haven't watched a full season of anything on it. It's there with BritBox, but usually the shows I want are on BritBox, not on Acorn.
So. There we go. If you've got something we should be on the lookout for, please email it to us, cordkillers@gmail.com. Thank you.
Kind of sounds like Bones meets The Mentalist.
Yeah.
Meets Ghosts.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sounds cool. Thank you, Dave. Listen, Brian.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too personal.
I'm listening, and I would prefer you didn't get too personal.
But did you pay for that PC?
Wow. That did get personal. No, Tom, I didn't. It's on loan from our friends over at Doghouse Systems. Everybody head on over to doghousesystems.com. They have unparalleled customer service. The sooner or later you have to upgrade your computer, might as well make us look good and help us work off our debt to those fine folks over at Doghouse Systems. Use promo code ROGUE at checkout. You get an SSD and you'll be working off our debt. Thank you very much to our friends over at Doghouse Systems.
But before we move on, I hear you're trying something later this week.
Okay. All right. Sign up for the email list, gimme.scamstuff.com. There's an event I'm going to do 1 month from now. I'm actually really wound up about it and we'll talk about it in after talk. But it's like emotionally challenging for me to do, and I think it's important.
You're gonna sing, aren't you? Sing?
You know what? I respect my audience too much to do that. So no.
Wow.
Find out what it is. Let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Bloomberg Second Measures transaction data shows that Netflix and Disney Plus's bundle have the highest overall customer retention rates in 2021. In fact, most ad-free plans have higher retention rates than ad-supported versions. Netflix had the highest retention rate all last year at 72%. The Disney bundle was 68%. Discovery Plus was next at 64%. And then Disney Plus outside of the bundle had a retention rate of 62%. After that, it's Hulu, Peacock, and Paramount Plus in that order. So retention, certainly in 2021, was not one of Netflix's problems.
That was one of the big things that Meryl Barr last week was hammering on, was retention. Meanwhile, Netflix laid off 25 people from its 500-person global marketing team, including some of the writers of Netflix's entertainment news websites. Ta-dum. Netflix does not plan to shut down the site. If we're reading tea leaves, what do we feel like this means, Tom?
They're tightening the belt. They're finally, after all these years, going, maybe that's not worth the money.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe not all the sodas are free in the break room. They're looking for little ways to save some money here.
I think last week I referred to the Vegas practice of so-called deferred maintenance, where, you know, do all of the light bulbs need to work?
I remember when Paul Allen bought Tech TV, they took out a bunch of things from the break room because they were like, look at this run rate. You can't just give people free oatmeal. And it was like, I was like, really? You're saving that much money on oatmeal? No. Oh, okay. In its Q1 earnings, Roku reported active accounts increased 14% on the year to 61.3 million. That adds 1.1 million since last quarter. Overall hours streamed in Q1 grew 14% to 20.9 billion. So more users, more streaming. That's what Roku wants. They're selling ads now. That's what they want. Platform revenue, which includes those ads as well as content deals, increased 39% to 647 million. But hardware fell 19% on the year to 86.8 million. Unit sales were down 12% on the year. Roku added the Apple Music app to its channels store Monday. That will work on any currently supported Roku streaming device, and music videos will play in 4K. Is there a weird world, Brian, where we end up where Roku is just a channel on other devices
at some point, and people forget they were a hardware platform at all? You and I have speculated in the past about the possibility that Roku would go completely virtual, that they would cease to be a hardware company and just become a brand. And I think we're seeing exactly that, right?
This is the earliest days. We're not saying Rokus are going to disappear off the shelves anytime soon, but yeah, it does seem like Roku's like, yeah, this is exactly what we expect. Hardware down, everything else up. That's what we want.
Comcast and Charter are developing a streaming platform which will run on TVs and streaming devices. So basically, think of a competitor to Roku and Fire TV. It's based on Comcast's Flex software, so it already has apps including Netflix, Hulu, Apple TV+, Prime Video, and all of the like, along with Comcast's Xumo, will get a prominent placement.
Yeah,
I said that right.
I don't think this is going to take over. You know, I don't think like, we just saw that Roku's like, yeah, the platform's great for now. I think this is a stopgap for Comcast and Charter, which is why they're partnering on it. This is something they can give those cable subscribers as they leave. Thank you for your service. As you become a streaming person here, use our streaming platform. At least we'll get some money out of you that way.
It's really weird to watch a physical brand become a virtual brand. For example, like I think Hydrox Cookies became totally like they ceased to exist, but they existed as a brand. And somebody was able to shrug their shoulders and say, yeah, we'll be Hydrox Cookies now because you have vague good feelings about Hydrox Cookies.
Most of the stuff that my dad worked on for Pet Milk back in the day is now a virtual brand, including Pet Milk itself.
Wow.
A few other notes here. We mentioned Iron Chef with Alton Brown alongside Kristen Chiss will premiere June 15th. However, Meghan Markle's animated series has been dropped by Netflix. Cutting those costs. Meghan Markle got cut. Apple TV Plus ordered a second season of historical drama Pachinko. Amazon filed paperwork valuing its purchase of MGM at $3.4 billion. That's a lot of money, but not as much money for a studio as you might have thought. Robert Pattinson will return as Batman in a second movie with Matt Reeves returning to direct. And you may have read that Justin Lin left Fast 10 production a week into production. And Variety reports that Universal has now hired French filmmaker Louis Leterrier to replace him. If you know Louis's work, you might know 2010 Class of the Titans or the series Lupin. He did both of those.
Man, I wish I had anything to say about either.
About Louis Leterrier?
No. Yeah, or Clash of the Titans.
What about Fast and the Furious losing Justin Lin? I'm still curious. I'm still
I
weird.
Bet it's Fast and very upset.
Yeah, because the whole thing was Justin Lin, Tokyo Drift, the man who's been guiding the franchise through its most popular phase, was going to bring it to a close with a two-parter movie. Well, now he's not there for either part. So are they still going to do the two-parter movie? I don't know. We'll find out.
Those are good questions that I have
Maybe
no answers.
You can email us, cordkillers@gmail.com, what answers you think. Dispatches from the Front is where we will read those answers.
Yes.
Dave in Waco wrote in and said, I wanted to comment on one of Brian's questions from 2 weeks ago. In the story about FIFA starting a new service to show lots of soccer, parentheses, football games, Brian asked why people would want to watch games they already know the result for. For me, I usually don't care who wins, but as a 25-year referee, I watch the games for the chance to watch the third team in each game, the four members of the referee team. I watch particularly to learn from the best referees about positioning and decision-making. In addition, soccer is the only sport I enjoy watching, so any game is a good game to me. Dave.
in my defense, I think I was pretty clear that I thought that was a cool idea, that you could take something that you don't really have a dog in the fight from 20, 30 years ago, and instead, by seeing the run-up to it, you can emotionally be invested in it. It's not that I didn't understand why somebody would want to watch it, but I felt like this was a good way to recontextualize all of that.
Yeah, and to be fair, I hope that didn't distract from the main point of the story, which is FIFA is bringing you live games. The majority of what they expect people to watch at that service is live games, but Brian was reacting to the fact that it would have every recorded World Cup game, you know, going back to when they
It would be fair to say was a little bit preoccupied with the fascinated by the back catalog.
Idea. I feel like that sort of thing is stuff you do because it looks good on the press release, not because you think it's going to be the thing that drives views, right? It might be a thing that makes people sign up, but you're going to get all your views out of the live stuff. It is interesting though. And to Dave's point, I think a lot of people do watch games, even if they know the result, to see how it got there. My wife loves pitching. She's a big fan of pitching in baseball. And so she loves watching a pitcher's duel. She just loves to watch the way pitchers decide what to throw, what their location is. And so she likes that, even if she kind of knows what's happening. Whereas I like the whole game. And to me, I'm in that camp that Dave talks about, where you just watch a game no matter what it is. I'm as happy watching a high school game or a college game as I am a major league game sometimes, if I'm in that mood where I'm like, I just want to watch baseball. I just want to follow this game. So there's that too, that aspect to it. That said, I never go back one of us go back and watch old games.
This is part of the reason I'm such a fan of the virtual idea that maybe it already exists. Like I think of Joe Bob Briggs, where he would enlighten me as to why I should care about various horror movies, right? Likewise, you could take me into a sports arena and say, I want you to watch the way people are handling the ball in this game or that game or whatever. Like, educate me, and all of a sudden I see it in a new light.
Well, and that I think is the point Dave's making, is he's a referee. So he knows what to watch for with the referees, and that makes it enjoyable. If Dave were to stand up and do recordings of like, watch, this is an amazing game to watch for the referees, here's what to look for, I think both of us would find that compelling and fascinating, right?
Sure. Or especially like what calls would be like a hard line or versus a soft line and so on. Yeah.
Well, that is going to wrap it up for us. Thank you so much for being along with us for Cord Killers. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which is also carried at diamondclub.tv, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll talk to you again next time.
Hey, Tom Merritt, what's going on?
I'm just hanging out here watching this scroll go by. What are you doing?
Trying to set up a bit where we thank our beautiful, beautiful patrons, all these wonderful names.
I'm sorry,
names.
I'm too distracted looking at these beautiful, beautiful patron names going by. Look at that one. I mean, if you wanted to be one of these people, patreon.com/cordkillers would be the place to go.
I mean, they're scratching our itch, like, because we're addicted.
I think as long as it's consensual, like,
we're addicted to their money.
And love. Might as well face it.
Well, God damn it.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.